The CCHA quarterly meeting, 2 p.m. Sunday, June 30th, will come to order. Dehennas High School, Dehennas, Texas. I'm so glad to see all of you here today. And if you would be seated, Wayne Chaney will lead us in an invocation. Wayne? Thank you, Wayne. As I said, it's really great to see this crowd here today, and I'm so appreciative of you coming. Would you hold your hand if you are a first-time member attending the meeting? Please hold up your hand if you're a first-time member attending the meeting. Great. And if you're attending for the first time, if you've been a long-time member, hold up your hand. We always have a few of those, too. So glad that you're here today. Now, do we have visitors who are just visiting? We'd like to recognize you. Oh, my, looky there. Great. Thank you. I'm so glad you're here. We hope you'll all come back. In your newsletter, those of you who are members, you received a copy of the minutes, and I trust that you read the minutes, and if so, I'd like an approval of the minutes as distributed. Well, we'll correct that, Teresa. Are there any other corrections? Any additions to the minutes? All right. Do I hear a motion for approval as distributed? Somebody? Joseph? Bertha, second. All right. Thank you. Our treasurer's report, Joseph.
This is for the period of March the 1st through the 31st of May. We had an opening balance of $4,885. We had income as follows. From dues, $107. From book sales, $7,468. $6,566 of that was for history books. We had miscellaneous income of $73, that amounted to $45 for postage. We had a $25 income from a book that wasn't available. Memorials was $25, and bank interest was $74. A total income for the period of $7,747. Expenses was $615, $551 of that is for the PA system that you hear now. Transfer to the memorial fund was $90. Quarterly meeting expense, $131. Postage paper and printing was $61. Book purchases and book mailing expense, etc., was $5,329. And the breakdown of that is $5,000 of that was for the down payment on the history books that were ordered. $200 were for 20 Sister Generosa books. You know, about $100 was for the ads in the paper and administrative costs of promoting the book. Anyway, the expenses was $6,228, leaving a checking balance of $6,405. There's four investment accounts that are in banks in Medina County that amount to $39,228. And when you add that with the checking balance, it gives us $45,633. Okay? Thank you.
Thanks to Joseph, our records are in very good shape, and we sound like we have a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money when you want to build a building, you hope someday, or a little museum. So we thank you, Joseph, for your report. Corresponding Secretary, Billy Bilharz. Would you come forward, Billy?
We mailed out 242 newsletters, and then we got more new members, and so the total now is 248 newsletters have been mailed out for this quarter. It's good.
Billy and Herbert worked very hard on the newsletter. Our membership committee, Aline.
Well, at our March 17th meeting, we had 280 members, and since then we've got 29 new members since that meeting, giving us a total of 308 members to date.
Can you believe that? That is great that we have that many members. And as I said before, as our name spreads and our activities become known, we join, more people join. Also,
wait, you want to go ahead?
All right. This is the new list of members that we are not included in the yearbook. So if you want a copy of this, you're welcome to. We have copies at the back. These are the members that have joined since the March meeting.
Good, thank you. Did you all understand that membership that has joined since the yearbook was published? Our Ways and Means, Dorothy Cease. Dorothy has been busy, I know that. Please, Dorothy, please come forward. Can't get away. The history books are here, as most of you know. If you ask to have your book mailed, please do not pick it up because it's coming from the publisher. And if you ordered a book and you haven't picked it up from one of us, well, you're welcome to pick it up back here, and I'll check off my list. We also have a few more cookbooks. We have the Let's Celebrate, our newest book. I have two more copies of Sister Generosa's History of Divine Providence, which is a marvelous history of this area. I have a new shipment of Indian Fighter by A.J. Sowell. And what else? I think that's it. So I have all of these books back. Oh, and the Julian O. Wall book on Castroville. We have a number of those. Thank you, Dorothy. Oliver, our Historical Commission representative, Oliver, would you have a report for us? Yes, sir. Please do. We have this new microphone. We're going to use it.
It's always good when you come to a meeting and somebody gives you an application already ready, filled out for a historical marker, and we have one. This is on St. John the Evangelist Catholic Church at Hondo. Lucy Davidson and Rose Alloy. Rose. So anyway, as you know, it'll take a couple of months to get the marker, plus a year. I called last week into Austin to the Texas Historic Commission on a marker in San Antonio. They've been they want it in October, and it's been up in Austin. The application has been over a year, and they told me it'll be about another 8 or 10 months before it'll be approved. So that's how far they are behind on marketing. Now, don't ask me the reason. I don't know. This last week, we had Miss Terry Kinsley, who is architect with the Texas Historical Commission here in Medina County, and Medina County is her county. We had her down here for two purposes. For number one is to go over St. Anthony's School. We've had a meeting here, the parish did, and they're going to restore that school 100%, and there's no opposition. Matter of fact, they started Friday putting the roof on it. So the new roof will be on this coming week. They also then went to Hondo over, check over there on the church and the school. And that's all I'll tell you about that. But anyway, there are several applications that I've mailed within the last 2 weeks to different ones here in the county that are going to apply for markers. So get the information in. As soon as you get it, we'll get it into Austin, and then in about a year's time, your marker will be here, we hope. That's the only report I've got. Thank you.
Thank you, Oliver. That's great news, and we're very proud of that action. Historical Research, Herbert Bilharz, do you have a report? Thank you. Well, I'm sure you'd like to know what your board has been up to and what your CCHA has been up to. As Dorothy said, the history book is in. And my goodness, we came down to the wire. I was really worried, and I think I gave Mr. Noller in Dallas a little fits. But at any rate, the history book is here, and if you know anyone who did not know about it, or if you could pass the word, we'd appreciate that. We do have pickup points in Hondo and in Castroville. In Hondo with Lucy, or if you or Aline volunteered to help, and in San Antonio with me. So please help us get the word out. Also, on June the 8th, and we have pictures back there for you to see, your CCHA board had approved participation in the Hondo Salute to the Military. So we had a float. Thanks to Joseph and Elaine, they brought their truck out. We decorated red, white, and blue. And our salute was to Greg, Captain Greg Bilharz, son of Billy, and Herbert Bilharz, and we are very proud to have Greg come and ride in the float. And we had, as I said, we have pictures back there for you to see. We also received a certificate from the Hondo Lions Club, who were sponsoring it. And I don't think Joseph's truck's ever going to be the same again. But at any rate, Joseph even cleaned up the truck, painted, and did all sorts of things. Poor Joseph. But it was fun, and we enjoyed it. Then at our board meeting, we set guidelines for the use of this new PA system. We, the board, decided that it's to be used for CCHA meetings, our CCHA-connected activities. Also, upon approval of the board and request by a historical group, and provided the president or a member is invited, a board member is invited, could be used. No private parties or that type of thing. We wanted you to know that. We're very proud of having this new system and for you to enjoy at our meetings. Also, the nominating committee has been appointed. It's getting to be that time again. Charlie Cease, it will be chairman. Lucy Davis will serve, and Herbert Bilhart. And if you have any suggestions, please let these folks know. And Charles also asked that after the meeting, if the nominating committee could meet in a corner, he would appreciate that. And then on June 16th, Jerome and I were privileged to attend a barbecue dinner, a welcome dinner, at the home of Mootsie and Charlie Cease. And Oliver and Sue were also on the welcoming committee for a group of agricultural-related folks who came from Alsace. They were, as I understand, grain and feed salesmen. They were awarded this trip by two of the big companies, and Gilbert Hadi, who was the tour chairman, decided that this group needed to come to Medina County. They could have gone anywhere in the U.S., but Gilbert pointed them to Medina County. He's a very good promoter of the Castro colonies and has brought groups before. But anyway, we had a great time, and I welcomed the group on behalf of you, CCHA, and presented them with copies of the Let's Celebrate, one to the society president, one to the immediate past president who could speak English, and then to Gilbert. But it was a fun evening, and we appreciated being there. Also, lose my notes here. We've been busy, as I said, with the history book. And we will participate in the Medina County Fair. So if you would like to work on Saturday, September the 21st, to help us sell some more books and just generally promote CCHA, we'd love to have you work, and I have a tablet for you to do that. Now, is there any old business anyone would like to remind us? Any new business that you would like to present? All right. Well, today is a big day and a fun day. And who remembers the old party line? Well, Bertha is here to set the stage and let you learn about those days. So, Bertha, if you will come forward.
Well, when I mentioned this idea of maybe having a program on the telephone and party line talk, et cetera, et cetera, I just was kind of thinking about it, but Adrian said it was a good idea and wouldn't let me get out of it once I start hitting cold feet. So here we are. We're doing this program on what we can remember about the old telephone and the party line. And so I thought first of all, I want to say this is going to be for fun today. So let's not be uptight about it. Let's not get worried whose feelings we're going to hurt or anything like that. Because we've just come for fun to kind of remember the way it was when we were kids and even growing up. And so anybody here who has a good story to tell, we want to hear it from you after a while. We've got some operators here. We'll let them tell some of their stories from the operator end of the line. But then it's going to be your time. And so just let's relax and just have a good time. I did think I'd start off with something a little more serious, though, just to tell you that, did you know that the first telephone came to Texas in 1878? And it was really in Galveston. The man who put out the Galveston News put a wire in from his office to his home. Shortly thereafter, in that same year, I think George Brackenridge in San Antonio worked at the San Antonio National Bank, and he put a line in from there to his home, which his home is still standing today on the grounds of Incarnate Word College. So that was the first telephone line there. In June 1881, the first telephone exchange went into business in San Antonio with 50 subscribers. Now, in order to get central, you had to forcefully hit a button that was on the side of the signaling block, which then would generate a current, and it would make a little flag fall down in the exchange office, probably very much like you had around here. Then, but what happened was these operators didn't always get this message right away, and so the person would have to slap at this button maybe 2-3 times. And they said you could always tell where these telephones were because the plaster was always all cracked around the walls where these telephones hung. So that's how it started in San Antonio. And they said the girls in from those days then, that's when they got the name of the Hello Girls in the 80s there. It said then shortly after the lines were in the city of San Antonio, of course, the party lines began. They came into being, and eavesdropping began. And I'm sure there isn't a person here who was ever around a party line who didn't listen at least once. It was so tempting to have that party line there and hear the ring and know who's calling whom and not to listen. That would be something. So anyway, I assume, and it looks like, that the telephones must have come into Medina County, I guess, in the early 1900s. And I think that in each town there must have been a central office, like in Dehennis, we had an office that was above the Carly Mercantile store, and one person, even our operator, Lena Reinhardt, who worked for her father, and I guess her brother, Mr. Paul Reinhardt, Mr. Oliver Reinhardt, she slept there too. So in case of an emergency, she was there. And the hours, I think you remember, were from morning until 9 o'clock. And after that time, you did not phone unless you had an emergency. Now, what some people considered an emergency sometimes was debatable, I think, and sometimes there were kind of funny happenings. I thought it might be fun right at this time if Oliver would come up and tell us about the telephones that he brought. After all, it was his father and his grandfather who started the line here in Dehennis. So, Oliver, would you like to just give us a few words? As you see some telephones around here too, there's one over there. He's done something with them. As you can see, he's made them into lamps. But I thought maybe at this point we'll have him tell us.
I just brought 3 old phones. Here's one, and here's another one, and there's one over there. One of these And those are the only three phones my grandfather bought in DeHennis in the early 1920s. One was for Carly's store, and the other was for Rodie and Cook, and the other was for the bank. Those are the only ones that got these phones. Everybody else got the phones on the wall, you know. But these were the special phones, and so I brought them. We had them. We've got them all electrified, and so I thought you might want to look at them and see. The only thing I didn't bring, and of course I destroyed it here about 2 or 3 years ago, a book about this thick of all the people that still owe bills for the telephone. You know, at that time, it was $1.25 a month. And my grandfather and my dad, the same way, never would cut off anybody if they didn't pay. Oh, they need that phone. They've got to have it. But you should be surprised. They kept those old books, and I took them and got them, and I burned them up about 2 or 3 years ago. I said, no sense in keeping them. It's about that thick of the people that still owe on the phone bills here in DeHennis. But let me say this about from 9 o'clock to 7 in the morning, I believe it was. When I was going to A&M in the summertime, my old maid aunt, she was the night operator and I think the day operator and everything. But anyway, I relieved her. Couple of years in the summer when she'd go on vacation. Well, anyway, something happened where the people in DeHennis knew that I was up there, because after 9 o'clock that thing would ring all night long and I'd answer it, you know, but when she came back, they quit. At 9 o'clock it was closed. But anyway, one evening at 9 o'clock I closed it up and I went out someplace, I don't remember, and came back about 11:30, and I mean the people had called in there, and I guess they thought the operator died, but anyway, I pushed them all up because hoping nobody had an emergency at that time. But that's the only thing that I can remember. We still have a bunch of these wall phones. When we moved up here several years ago, my dad was selling those things for $5 a piece. And some of them, he would just, oh, get them away from here, though. And he had a bunch of these old green poles, you know, that you put on the... Well, somebody came from Bandera, and he said, take all you want. Get them out of here. And I said, Daddy, you know what they're selling for? No, I don't care what they're selling. I said, they're selling for $1 a piece. Oh, well, he went out there and said, give me a penny a piece for them. And he said, so anyway, they took them all. But we still have those... where you used to climb poles, and we still have a lot of that old equipment, still have it. Don't ask me what we're going to do with it, but we've still got that. But that's the only information. You can look at these phones here. I don't remember which one was in the bank, one in the bank and one Carly's store, and the other one over there was in Rodie and Cook's store. Those are the only three that they had at that time.
Thanks, Oliver. The wall phone you see there, I brought, and that was a phone from DeHennis, and I think our mother, Alice Cook, just let Mr. Reinhardt take it away. It was his phone, of course. She was so happy to get that new little French-style phone that she gave him the wall phone. And I can remember that during the war, I was always embarrassed about that old big phone on the wall, you know. And I think when Sarah got married, it turned up in a lot of the pictures. We said, oh, golly, that thing had to be on all the pictures. And so, of course, we were kind of glad to get rid of it. But that phone hangs in my house in San Antonio all the time. I'm very glad to have it. Sarah gave it to me as a Christmas present and bought it from Mr. Reinhardt. Frank fixed it up. So anyway, the things you once think you really want to get rid of are treasures later on. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about Central. Here, of course, it was Lena most of the time. and how important that central was to the whole town. After all the good and all the bad news came over that telephone. And I think about my dad when the church bell would toll, somebody died. Well, Daddy would go to the phone and say, "Lena, who died?" And she would tell. And then if we were sometimes out of town on a Sunday and missed a ball game, well, the first thing he did was go to the phone when we got home, ask Central, "Who won the game?" I mean, Central had to do a lot of things, you know. And as you know, Central and Dehennis rang the bell. I guess they still do for fires. And I guess it was the same in others. We're going to hear about that. So now we have with us some of the people who've worked in other cities, and they're going to tell you some little experiences they had as operators. Mabel, would you like to start? Maybe we have Mabel Cease here from Castorville. And
Richard Smith.
You want to come here? And you can come here, or you want to sit there?
You just hold it and talk next.
Well, let's talk.
Okay. Over here.
Maybe she ought to come here. Oh. Okay.
I worked for Medina San Geronimo Telephone Company in Castorville, and I worked for Medina San Geronimo Telephone Company in Castorville for about 9 years, and as Bertha was saying, everybody would call Central for information, and I think we were the first answering service. Because a lot of the business people, when they were going out of town for any length of time, they would call us and ask us to please take their calls. And when they'd come home, well, they'd call and wanted to know, did we have any calls? And, of course, we relayed the message. And as Bertha said, when anyone died, they'd call. Usually the funeral home would call us and tell us who died, and we had to ring a signal on all the party lines, which was 15 short rings, 3 times in succession. And when it was discontinued, everyone was very unhappy about it, because they thought they had lost touch with the world. And, of course, we were called for the time. We were called for a lot of other things that went on in the community. And, right at this point, I'm at a loss. Maybe someone else should take over and tell some of their... I don't believe that was me. No, but we did ring the fire whistle, too. When there was a fire, we had to blow the fire whistle, and we had to blow it when there was a meeting. And, like I say, I'm at a loss for words right at this point, but I know there's some more things that I could... Yes.
When you think of it, we'll come back to you. As somebody else tells something, it might make you remember. Anybody here ready to talk from Honda? Nellie, would you like to? And Cecile? If Cecile is ready. Cecile, how many years were you an operator?
37.
37 years. Cecilia Gortizer Cook was an operator in Honda. So she's got a couple of stories here. I know she was the chief operator. And she was the chief operator, so she's... Okay. Okay, try that, Cecile. Pretty close to you. We'll see how it works.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Just go ahead.
Well, when I started, we had
I think, 5 operators. 1 night operator, and then the 4 during the day. We had different shifts, 7 to 11 and 12 to 3, and then 8 to 12 and 1 to 4, and the night operator. You know, I don't know what we... Yeah, I don't know what I want to start in with. Yes, during war we had, after the war started, we had added 3 new switchboards, and we had 32 operators then that worked. So then after the war was, we went to direct dialing, and we went to the new office where we just had 7 operators that worked, because the only thing we had to do was work the toll calls, because they could dial their own numbers. And then we went to direct dialing.
Cecil, you got any funny story that happened during that time? You can tell us, wasn't there some man who called you or about a name he couldn't pronounce or something like that?
Well, he called for, lived on a ranch, and he'd do this work. He'd visit all the different ranches, and then he'd leave early in the morning, and he'd place a call then to his family. And he called from Gehenny's one day, and he said he wanted the widow and orphans home at Hondo. The widow and orphans home in Hondo, it's what he referred to his place, because he was gone so much.
And the widow and orphans home in Hondo.
Then I think the Henny's operator said they didn't have a place like that in Hondo, because she knew all the business places, but he wouldn't give up. So she called me, and I told her, well, he's just, you know, up to tricks all the time to try to get something on the operator that they wouldn't know what to do. So I give him the number, so he got to talk to his widow and orphan's home.
Did you hear that, everybody? The man who called the operator and said, I want the widow and orphan's home in Hondo. And of course, this operator here didn't know, called over to Hondo, but Cecil knew who it was, because he was always pulling those jokes on them. He was his own wife.
Well, I guess that's about all. I don't want to talk anymore.
Well, would you hand it over to Nellie for now, and Cecil can come back too? Nellie was an operator during the wartime.
Yes, I was, and of course grew up on the party line. We lived out in the country in Dehennis, and the only time you really didn't like the party line was when someone was listening in on your conversation. But I'm sure, like Bertha said, everyone listened. But I started in Hondo, but was, as soon as the base opened, then was transferred out and worked at the navigation base in Hondo. And we were picked up by a taxi that Southwestern Bell provided, took us out and brought us home after each shift. We worked many, many different kind of shifts, like split shifts a lot, like from 6 to 10 in the morning, and then from 2 to 6 in the afternoon was one day, or from 7 to 11, and then again 3 to 7 in the afternoon, in addition to shifts like 6 to 3 or 6 to 4 or 7 to 3, 6 to 2 in the morning, 6 to 2 in the afternoon, 7 to 3 or 3 to 11 or 2 to 10 or 10 to 6 in the morning. So it was very many, many different kind of shifts.
It was, we placed calls there to all over the United States and overseas, because of the duties of the navigation base. And, it was, you had to go by steps. You know, you just couldn't dial overseas at that point. You had to go through where probably Dallas and then New York and then wherever. So you had to go through a route to get there. So it was very interesting.
Okay.
Here we go.
I'm sort of the newcomer, I guess. I only worked there 5 years, about four in the old office and 1 year after we had turned to Dahl. And then I was gone for quite a number of years. My husband come home from overseas. And I come back and worked 2 weeks after we had direct dialing, and that was an experience. But we did have funny things that happened, and right now I can't think of any of them, but I know I didn't fill in during the wartime, which I know those girls really had it a busy time and all.
I don't know anything different to say, except I got a big kick out of an operator coming through our office one time asking for Cahula. And I said, "Operator, you mean Cthulhu?" And she said, "Well, Cahula, Cthulhu, what difference does it make? Ring me Corenzo Springs." And things like that, I got a big kick out of. And of course, we were the alarm clock and a lot of things, and they missed us when they turned the dial, because I've had a lot of people tell me that.
Well, I worked during the war. I started in 1944, so I got a lot of the rush, and it was pretty hard with just the ring, you know, and the drop. And we had, I think, like about 10 circuits to San Antonio. We would have to fight other operators for distant places. I worked in Hondo, San Antonio, and Hearn, and it was quite an experience. One thing I remember, too, one of our little operators was going to call Natalia, and she called San Antonio for Natalie. And we said, "Patsy, it's not Natalie." And they got calls for Queechy and different things like that. So, yes.
I'm the same thing.
Well, Faye's not going to talk. We can think of a lot of things, but forget it.
Ms. Havey. Well, those are the things that are funny in the way they mispronounce names and all. That's real funny.
Well, I got my first training at the telephone office in Beaumont for a whole year. And then after that, I worked at the Naval Air Station in Corpus, Beeville, Chaseville, and was sort of a floating air operator. And there was about, a lot of young single girls working there. We had much fun after work. If it was a birthday, somebody from the bakery sent us a birthday cake, and we were invited to all of the clubs, and we reported the plane crashes, the fires. We talked to the admirals and even to President Roosevelt. So a lot of this stuff was classified information, but it was fun years. And that's about it.
Thank you. Okay, Nellie has thought of something.
I remembered something else. When I started for Southwestern Bell, the salary was $14 a week. And they sent me to Pearsall for training, and I think I was there 2 or 3 weeks. And had to pay $5 rent, you know. So it was different.
Okay. Well, we weren't as fortunate in Castroville as they were in Honda. We weren't as many operators, and we had to work longer hours. In fact, we had to work 12 hours on Sundays from 7 to 7.
Wow.
The days got pretty long. And if you weren't there to answer the signals as soon as the drop came in, they wanted to know, are you sleeping? That was always the question, are you sleeping? We weren't allowed to go and excuse ourselves. We weren't allowed to go wash our hands or anything. We were supposed to be sitting at that board for 12 hours. And at our peak, I guess we had about 6 operators after Bell took over. But before that, well, we just were busy. Although people didn't think we were, everyone that called in thought they were the only customer. And a very dear friend of mine, Winnie Booble, who is now gone, we were sitting there talking one day as time was kind of quiet at the time, and she said, you know, you don't see very many bald-headed Mexican men. And about that time, one walked in, which I knew very well. And I said, well, here is one. And he wanted to know what we were talking about. I said, well, we were just talking about bald-headed Mexican men. And I said, Winnie just said that there weren't any. And I said, and you're bald-headed? And he said, oh, you're just like your dad. And this was before my time, before I was an operator, when they used to have dances up in Rio Medina. The young men used to go over to Cora's, who served food at intermission time, and they knew this night operator was a little bit cranky, and she had a reason to be, I'm sure. And they'd get on one of these crank phones, and they'd crank and crank and crank until she finally answered, and then they'd say, operator, will you give me heaven? I want to talk to St. Peter. They got her up for that. And we also had to serve Moy military schools. Of course, the kids could not come call to Mexico. Most of them were from Mexico, and they could not place calls into Mexico, but their parents very often called them, and that was a hassle. Those kids were nowhere to be found. We would have to wait on the line sometimes for 30 minutes to an hour while they were hunting these kids somewhere out on the playground. In the meantime, we were working the board. Most of the time, we were there by ourselves. Had to check from time to time, had this kid ever come to the telephone or not. And sometimes, like I say, it almost took an hour to get him to the telephone. So there were other experiences, I'm sure, but like I say, memory kind of fails me at this time. Fine, thank you. Anybody else come up? Somebody over there has something? Somebody back there? Anybody? Uh-huh. Just a minute. Could you come up here, Henry?
Just a minute.
Wait, help come to you.
Henry Martin, wait just a second.
So we can all hear it, Henry.
Our phone number was at home was 157, and I think the one at the bank, the old First National Bank, Honor National Bank, was a 71. Uncle John Fingers was 103. And I remember one day a mother called, and Miss Maud Bulgin, I believe, or Miss Callie Manning, I believe it was Miss Maud, and she called the bank, called 71, and Miss Maud said, Emma, I just came from town. Charlie is next door at George Corley's confectionery. I'll call over there for you. That's the way it was, really.
Yeah, that's the way it was. Is David Zinsmeyer here today? Well, later on we might tell something that had to do with his family. Well, okay. What is it? Doris? Okay.
Oh, my. When I first came to Castroville in 1954, my sister-in-law Mabel Cease and Winnie Gent Booble and Ray Burrell were the operators. And I'd have to run home and fix lunch, and somebody would be trying to get Gene. And they'd call me and say, "Where's Gene?" I'd say, "Just a minute," and then I'd hang up, and then either Winnie or Mabel or Ray would say, "Well, just a minute, let me look out the window." And they'd look out the window, and they said, "No, he just went around the corner in the truck." So anytime we wanted information, well, we would call them, and it was really disappointing when Bill came in and took away all our fun.
Yeah, I think so. Here's this little story. Connie Cook wanted to tell this today, but she's in Monterey, so she sent me the story. She said that Oscar Botter used to tell this story around Hondo, and he said that when the party lines were installed up Quihe Way, it was usual that when something was to be announced or advertised, Central would ring one long ring. You had the 15 four times for the other, which he remembered as one long ring up there. So one day there was this long ring and everybody picked up the phone and this announcement went over: "Show tonight, ladies free." I don't know where. Well, a short